war. Even as a child, she had always used the private roadways, always had temperate weather, never needed to worry about starving. Occasionally, she saw fires lining the sides of the road, large bonfires surrounded by the silhouettes of many people. The poor, moving out of the cities and into the forests, safer most likely, but also harder to survive.
Lily couldn't slow down to take a closer look. Armored or not, a Mercedes rolling at street speed was an open invitation.
But she couldn't help staring at them in the rear-view mirror. All of those human shadows standing around the flames. She couldn't help imagining the lives they led. "The better world," she whispered, repeating it every time another mile ticked off the odometer and into the night at her back. Green exit signs flew by, some of them so worn that Lily could barely read the white letters announcing their towns. Vernon, Tolland, Willington. Some of these were undoubtedly ghost towns, while others were alive but given over to lawlessness. Lily dimly remembered hearing Willington mentioned on a news site a few months ago, something about a cult. But she couldn't remember. And then Willington was behind her. She was halfway to Boston now, only 75 miles to go. Her phone beeped, and Lily gave a small croak of fright, certain that Greg had woken up, that he had gotten hold of a phone. She could barely bring herself to look at the screen, but when she did, she saw the word Jonathan shining against the bright blue background.
"Answer. Jonathan?
Where are... Mrs. M?"
His voice crackled with static, dropped out.
But of course cell service would be wretched outside the walls. People like Lily weren't even supposed to be here. With the advent of panic buttons in cars, no one even used a phone for emergencies anymore.
"I'm on my way to Boston."
"What's in Boston?" She might have been imagining it, but even under the static, Lily sensed a sudden guarded quality about Jonathan's voice.
"The warehouse, the port. They're in trouble, Jonathan."
"Greg
had Arnie Welch over for dinner."
"Mrs. M, can't hear you. Don't..."
Now the static cut in for a long moment.
"Boston."
"Jonathan?"
The call dropped.
Lily redialed, but she knew already that it was an empty gesture. She didn't even get Jonathan's voicemail this time. Only a dead and empty silence.
Peering down at her phone, she saw that she had no service.
Too late, she realized that the brief call had surely been recorded by security.
"Fuck," she muttered.
Jonathan had told her not to go to Boston, she was sure of it. But Jonathan didn't know what she did, and inertia had taken over now. She was already in trouble. There was no turning back.
At Sturbridge, she switched over to the Massachusetts Turnpike. For the first 15 miles of the pike, there were no freeway lights at all, not even the old arc sodiums. The highway was completely dark, except for the faint glow of moonlight, and Lily was forced to slow down to 45, which felt like crawling after the pure open speed of 84. She navigated on intuition rather than sight, squinting for the outline of things ahead, knowing that she should have turned back long ago. She breathed a sigh of relief as she passed Auburn and spotted the thin orange glow of lights in the distance.
"The better world," she whispered, watching another green digit trip forward on the odometer. "So close we can almost touch it."
She was only 40 miles away.
When Lily was growing up, Boston had still been a good place to visit for a day. Mum and Dad would take her and Maddie. Even though Dad had grown up in Queens and was a die-hard Yankee fan, he had a secret admiration for Boston. Mum liked to see the sights and shop, but Dad's bent was historical. He took Lily and Maddie to Boston Common, to the Kennedy Library. Once they'd even gone to the docks, to the site of the Boston Tea Party. And Dad had explained what had happened there. Quite a different story from the one Lily had heard in school. Maddie said that Dad's version might get him in trouble, so Lily had never repeated it. But it had been a struggle in 10th grade not to raise her hand and tell the teacher he was wrong. Whenever Lily thought of Boston, she always remembered standing on the docks and looking down at the water. Now Boston was buried under a haze of smog. The last few times Lily had been here with Greg, in the daytime, there had been no sunlight, only a thin, sickly luminescence, and now in the middle of the night, the sky over the city was bright orange, reflecting the streetlights below. When Lily rolled down the windows, the air tasted foul. When was the last time she had breathed outside air? She couldn't remember. She was so used to scrubbed air, the purifiers that covered New Canaan. As soon as she passed the Washington Street exit, Lily's phone chirped happily to let her know that service had been restored. If Greg had woken up, he would be able to track her by her tag, but that would take some time in the middle of the night. Her phone, though, was in Greg's name, and he would be able to look up its location himself. After a moment's thought, Lily chucked the phone out the window. She took the exit for Massport Hall Road and began to wind her way down Summer Street, heading toward the vast black emptiness that signified water. She had never been down to this part of the port. Dad had taken them up to the Congress Street Bridge, and in those days, the many child-friendly amusements up at Boston Harbor. But here, at Connolly Terminal, the waterfront was a sea of containers, and Lily was struck by the ghostly outlines of the container cranes, an endless row of stalk-like apparatuses towering over her head. They would be different colors, probably, but in the yellow light, they all took on varying shades of jaundice. The terminal seemed empty. Lily saw no people walking across the seamed pavement, no cars or movement of machines. Security was down there, she knew, probably hidden in the shadows of buildings and containers. What if they stopped her on the way in? She parked the car on the edge of an enormous parking lot behind several dumpsters in a lonely clump around a small outbuilding that looked as though it might once have taken tickets. For a moment, Lily simply sat there, feeling the adrenaline of the drive fade away. Her muscles felt as though she'd run a marathon. According to her map, the first condemned building was about half a mile to the north, a corrugated behemoth that looked like it was ready to collapse. The walls were covered with enormous patches of rust. Lily had brought along a plain black baseball cap, and now she gathered her hair up and tucked it inside the cap before getting out of the car. Someone might find the Mercedes and break into it while she was gone, but there was nothing to be done about that. A last look around revealed no one visible, and Lily darted across the poorly lit pavement, the stench of asphalt and chemicals burning her nose. The port had appeared deserted on the way in, but with each step, Lily became more convinced that she was being watched. Several times she ran across port rats, big as kittens, and not frightened of Lily at all. Most of them merely glanced at her as she passed by, but one actually stood its ground, squeaking in outrage, and Lily was forced to go around it, watching it with a wary eye, realizing anew how far out of her depth she really was. She finally reached the south wall of the warehouse and crouched against it, breathing hard. She had a stitch in her side. There were no doors on this wall. She would have to move around the corner to the east wall, the long side of the warehouse. Huddling close to the corrugated tin, she sidled down the wall until she reached the corner. She was just leaning forward to peek around it when something hard pressed against the side of her head. "Hands above your shoulders." Lily obeyed. She had never even heard him approach.
"She can't be security," another man said.
Lily raised her voice and spoke clearly. "I need to speak to Dorian Rice, William Tear, or Jonathan."
She felt like an idiot. She didn't even know Jonathan's last name. No names.
The man's hands were all over her now, but it was an impersonal search, feeling for weapons. Lily was glad she hadn't brought Greg's gun. She forced herself to remain still, though the man knocked her cap off so that her hair fell down her shoulders and into her face.
"Pretty lady, down here unarmed. You must be out of your fucking mind."
William Tear, Dorian Rice, Jonathan. I need to speak to one of them.
Do you now? And what about? Just give her to us, another man's voice floated out of the darkness behind Lily. She's war bait. It's all over her.
A hand groped beneath Lily's shirt, running across her naked shoulder.
Yep, still tagged too. Turn around, the first voice ordered.
Lily turned and found a short, powerfully built black man in green army fatigues. Behind him were several other shadowy figures, their silhouettes barely visible through the fog that had begun to creep across the port. The man pressed a gun against her temple, and Lily willed herself to be calm, breathing slowly and easily in through her nose and out through her mouth.
You're right. She's from inside the wall, but trying to dress like outside.
The man leaned closer, breathing heavily in Lily's face.
What are you doing here, wall lady?
I need to see one of them, Lily repeated, hating her own voice. She sounded like a child stamping her feet on the floor. You're all in danger here.
What danger would that be? Enough, one of the shadows snarled.
Lily couldn't see his face.
My boss said to kill anyone who approached the building. Just hand her over. We haven't had wall bait in a long time. This is our territory. My leader decides what happens to an intruder.
The black man shook his head disgustedly before turning back to Lily.
You picked a bad night to wander down here, wall lady.
Please, Lily begged. Time was ticking by, seconds rolling by constantly, impossible to get back. Please, the better world.
What do you know about the better world?
I know that it's close now, so close we can almost touch it.
He blinked and then studied her for a moment, his dark eyes moving rapidly across her face.
Lily felt herself being dissected from the inside out.
What's your name, wall lady?
No names, Lily almost replied.
But then her mother's voice echoed through her head, a constant phrase from Lily's childhood.
Now is not the time to be smart. Lily Mayhew. The short man tapped at his ear.
Come back.
He began to chatter rapidly in a language Lily didn't recognize. It sounded vaguely like Arabic, but she couldn't be sure. Her own name passed through the conversation, but Lily barely noticed. She was too busy watching the shadows who stood behind the man's shoulder. Panic was trying to swarm in her head, which created multiple scenarios faster than she could ignore them. Gang rape, torture, her own lifeless body floating in the inner harbour. The short man was with Tear, Lily felt certain. But at least some of these others were not, and they loomed out of the darkness, seeming 10 feet tall in the fog. They made Lily think of Greg, and she suddenly saw him, clear in front of her, sitting up from the kitchen floor and opening his eyes. The image made Lily jump, as though someone had prodded her with something sharp.
We're taking her in, the black man announced.
In there? One of the shadows detached itself and resolved into a tall man with messy blonde hair, dressed in a flamboyant woman's jacket of bright blue silk. The rest of his clothing was utterly destroyed, and as he drew nearer, Lily realized that she could smell him, a high stink of something rotten. She didn't like his eyes either. They had a bulging, manic look that Lily recognized from grade school, where several kids in her class had already been addicted to meth. When the man spoke, she saw that his teeth were a black-stained ruin.
She's not going anywhere near my boss. She could be wired.
The black man shook his head wearily.
They'll scan her for IEDs. Not good enough. You're in our house.
The black man produced a second gun. That means my leader's orders stand.
When we come to Manhattan, you can make the decisions.
He turned back to Lily.
Lace your hands on the back of your head.
Lily did.
Walk to your right, stay close to the building, and keep walking until I tell you to stop. Try anything creative, and I won't think twice before I shoot you in the head.
Lily nodded jerkily.
Blue horizon, my ass, the man in the silk jacket muttered. Bunch of pussies.
The black man ignored him, prodding Lily forward.
Move. Now.
Lily walked forward, concentrating on the ground ahead so that she didn't stumble or stagger. The man with the two guns wasn't bluffing. He had the air of the war vet about him, a quality Lily'd recognized from Jonathan. This man would do whatever needed to be done, even if that meant shooting Lily in the head and throwing her body into the harbor. She wondered what time it was, checked the instinctive motion to look at her watch. She was halfway down the corrugated side of the warehouse when the man said, "Stop." Another group had emerged from the fog on her right. The leader was hooded, carrying some kind of assault rifle on a strap over one shoulder. But as they neared, the hood came down, and Lily recognized those blonde goth girl knots with no trouble at all.
"Rich lady, you're kidding me."
Lily had stopped, but now the gun prodded her forward again. "I couldn't reach Jonathan. They're coming here at dawn." Dorian's face was marked up with black paint, but Lily still saw her brow furrow.
"Who?"
"Security. All of them. You have to get out of here."
"Is she nuts coming down here?" the black man asked. "I didn't want to take the chance."
"Not nuts." "No," Dorian replied slowly.
"I'm not," Lily blurted out. "I swear I'm not. Please. You have to get out of here." "We can make her talk," the man in the blue jacket offered, and the eagerness in his voice made Lily's stomach turn. "Not a chance," Dorian replied, and Lily heard real hatred in her voice. "I know your methods, you prick. You and your precious better world where everyone's equal to everyone else. But they aren't, are they? You and your boss still treat our people like shit. Your people are shit. Shooting up and whoring each other out and killing each other for the clothes off your backs."
Lily heard a dry click behind her. Dorian looked past her and raised her gun.
"Don't even think about it." "I'm thinking about it, cunt."
The men behind Dorian moved forward, and Lily saw that they were all armed with the same weaponry, gleaming black cylinders that looked like some sort of military hardware. Lily had never heard of a separatist attack on a federal armory.
But of course she wouldn't have. Security would never release that information to the public. "We're wasting time," the man in the blue jacket snapped.
Dorian ignored him, turning cold eyes back to Lily.
"Consider what you're doing here, Mrs. Mayhew. Because if I find out that you're here to fuck us over, I'll watch you die slow."
"I'm not," Lily insisted, trying not to let hurt creep into her voice, for she suddenly realized the staggering level of her own arrogance. In those few days in the nursery, she had convinced herself that she and Dorian had built up some sort of trust. But the divide between them was vast, and any dream of bridging it was a rich girl's fantasy. "Security's already surrounded this place, water and land. They're coming in tomorrow."
"How would a war bitch know something like that?" asked one of the men behind her. "This one might," Dorian replied thoughtfully. "She married into the DOD.
Lily blushed. Dorian's tone made it sound as though Lily had married her cousin and joined a family of inbred lunatics in their shack.
"Scan her and bring her inside."
Lily held still for the body scanner, though the black man gave her an extra sharp prod in the stomach. The scanner made her wonder again where they had gotten all of this hardware. Security equipment was supposed to be tagged upon manufacture. Had the Blue Horizon figured out a way to remove the tracking chips for equipment as well as people? When the scan was done, Dorian chattered the strange language into her own headset for a moment, then prodded Lily with the tip of her rifle. "Inside." Lily went through the warehouse door, her hands still laced behind her head, and blinked as light assaulted her eyes, blinding her for a few moments. When she recovered, she found herself in a large room with corrugated metal walls. A small table was set up in the middle of the room, two men seated there. Lily first spotted Jonathan standing behind a chair at the far end, and in the chair sat William Tier, staring with narrowed eyes at the man opposite. Dorian prodded Lily in the back with her rifle, and Lily marched forward. Several more guards moved to surround her now, though she was relieved to see they only had pistols. Two of the guards were women, which surprised Lily. She had somehow assumed that Dorian was unique. Tyr looked up in annoyance as they approached, but as he spotted Lily, his face changed, became unreadable, and he stood up from his chair. The man at the near end of the table turned around, and Lily fought not to recoil. He had lost most of his face to acid, or something worse. Red, angry tissue covered his cheekbones and crawled over his forehead. His teeth were just as bad as those of the man outside.
"Nice, Tyr," the burned man rasped. "Your people led a security agent through."
"No," Tyr replied coldly. "Not sure what she is, Parker, but she's not security."
"Look at her clothes. Whatever she is, she's war meat, and she's seen my face."
Parker came toward Lily. His disfigurement made him look simultaneously ancient and rapacious, and Lily shrank back. He reached out and grabbed her breast, roughly, wrenching it to the left, and Lily clamped her lips shut on a groan.
"Take your hands off her."
Tyr's voice had turned to ice now.
"Why should I?"
Parker grabbed at Lily's other breast, and her hand balled into a fist. But then she felt Dorian's hand slide over her shoulder and clamp there, a warning. Lily closed her eyes, forced herself to be still.
"Because if you don't, Parker, I break that hand and throw you out of here with nothing. None of my toys. How would you like that?"
Parker's face twisted angrily, but he finally let go. Lily backed up, clutching her aching breast, until she bumped into Dorian's rifle again. These people, Parker and his men, were what Lily had always pictured when she thought about life outside the wall. Violent and careless, with none of the fundamental decency she sensed from Tyr and his people. So what were they doing here? Tyr left the table, and Jonathan followed, keeping close in the same way that he did with Lily. His eyes constantly landed on Tyr, and then flitted away, anxious, looking for threats. And at that moment, Lily realized that Jonathan had never really been her bodyguard. He was Tyr's man, and Lily had only been an incidental stop on the way. Tyr halted in front of her, and she was struck again by his military posture, straight, with the heels together. Time seemed to be slipping away again. She wished she could check her watch, but she kept her hands up. It would be long past midnight now. How many hours until dawn?
"Mrs. Mayhew, why are you here?"
Lily took a deep breath and repeated the entire evening's events. Everything since Arnie Welch had shown up for dinner. She omitted nothing, except Greg and the picture frame, when the moment came she found herself unable to tell that story in front of all these people. Tyr's gaze never wavered from her as she spoke, and Lily found that she had been right that night in the nursery. His eyes were not grey, but silver, a bright and glimmering silver. Lily had to fight not to look down.
"She's lying,"
Parker announced flatly when Lily had finished. Jonathan leaned over to whisper into Tyr's ear, and Tyr nodded.
"We did lose Goodin a week ago. Several bodies were burned beyond recovery in that explosion." "That's an easy piece of bullshit for security. They could have identified your man by dental records and then sent this whore in to tell a story."
"Security doesn't have any medical records on my people."
"Someone else talked."
"How did she know where to find us then, Parker?"
Tyr's voice thinned with contempt, but he turned to Dorian.
"Dorry, take your boys out and have a look around. 30 minutes.
The gun barrel withdrew from Lily's spine and she shivered. Dorian's hand squeezed her shoulder one last time, then left.
"So what to do with the whore?"
Parker asked. His men had moved up to surround him, and Lily saw that they carried only knives or pistols, antiquated guns that must have been at least 20 years old, none of the heavy weaponry that Tyr's people were holding. Tyr's people seemed cleaner as well, as though they had access to plumbing. Here and there, Lily saw crooked teeth, but none of them seemed to be rotten. The Blue Horizon clearly had their own doctors. Did they have a dentist as well? Clothes, teeth, weapons? Everything about Tyr's people seemed to be newer, better. What can he possibly want with these people?
"This is our house, Parker," Tyr replied. "The woman belongs to us. Jonathan, take her in the back and have a good time. Afterward, we might pass her around."
He sat back down at the table and gestured Parker into the other chair.
"Let's finish up."
Jonathan grabbed Lily's arm roughly and began dragging her toward a door at the far end of the room.
"Fight me," he muttered. "Put on a show."
This was actually a godsend. Lily's nerves, frayed almost bare, suddenly sprang to life, and she hauled back and punched Jonathan in the face. He took a fistful of her hair and dragged her toward the door. Lily pawed ineffectually at his shoulder, and then they were through the door, and Jonathan slammed it shut, then stood her up in front of him. "Scream, as loud as you can." Lily drew a deep breath and screamed. Jonathan let her go on for perhaps 2 seconds, and then clamped a hand over her mouth, muffling the scream into a grunt. He released her, and Lily moved over to perch on the arm of a puffy, misshapen chair that sat against the wall.
"Sorry about that, Mrs. M. It's all these people understand."
Jonathan hurried over to a door that stood open on the far side of the room. He shut the door, but not before Lily glimpsed something enormous in the warehouse space beyond. Long bars of wood crisscrossed with horizontal beams that extended out of her range of vision. Lily had the impression of a massive skeleton, wooden Goliath, half-finished. The skeleton of a ship. She stared at Jonathan for several long minutes, her thoughts jumbling together around this new puzzle piece. Horses and medical equipment stolen. Transcontinental jets destroyed. Satellites brought down from the sky. A wooden ship being built by hand? The river-covered land that Lily had only glimpsed in her mind. A land where there was no security, no surveillance, nothing. And then she understood. "You're leaving. All of you are leaving."
"I can't talk about it, Mrs. M."
The door slammed behind them and Tyr stalked into the room.
"It's set, September 1st. "Parker gone?" "No. He thinks he'll get a crack at Mrs. Mayhew here. Animals, a lot. What's the word on the DOD feed?" "Those three destroyers are still sitting a few miles outside the harbour. They're not moving, just waiting."
Lily's mouth dropped open and she stared at them, staggered. How could Tyr have gotten into the Department of Defense? "The same way they can bring the satellites down from the sky and put out the power," her mind whispered. "Technology is only as good as the people who supervise it."
"There's radio silence all around the edge of the terminal," Jonathan continued.
Tyr nodded.
"Hard to say when they'll come, but I'm betting soon."
Lily groaned, the truth tumbling into her stomach like a pile of rocks. "You already knew?"
"Yes."
She sat down in the chair, covering her face with her hands. All of this, the entire journey, Greg, she had done it for nothing. She looked up at Jonathan, her cheeks blooming with furious colour.
"I tried to save you the trip, Mrs. M." Another whoop came from the room outside and Tyr rolled his eyes. "That's long enough, I suppose. Go and tell some heroic rape stories. Get them all ready to move as soon as Dory comes back. We'll send Parker and his bunch out by the surface tunnels."
Jonathan left, and Tyr collapsed into an armchair near the door, perching his arms on his knees. The silver eyes gleamed at Lily, even from across the room.
"I'm sorry for all of this. I'd like to shoot them as dogs, but I need them."
"Why?"
"Because my people are valuable, Mrs. Mayhew. They're intelligent and well-trained.
Brute force would be a waste of their talents.
What happens on September the 1st?
Nothing you want to know about. How did you get here?
I drove.
Husband let you out in the middle of the night for a romp, did he?
I think I killed him.
Tia looked up sharply.
I bashed him on the head and left him there.
Lily didn't want to keep talking, but it was like that night in the nursery. The words tumbled out.
He wanted me to have a baby. He wanted to take me to an in vitro doctor. It didn't matter what I wanted.
Tia nodded. It's a problem. Women are selling their eggs for the price of a small bag of meth, but the rewards on the other end are enormous.
Lily considered for a moment. I wanted to kill him.
Well, you'll be facing a world of hurt when you get home, one way or another.
Lily nodded.
Leave your car here. Security's ringed the port. There's no way you got in without their notice. They've seen your car and marked it as belonging to my people. Leave it here, and Jonathan will take you home. You can claim you were carjacked and called him to come get you.
My tag will show I'd been here.
That's true, he replied. And Lily saw that he'd only been trying to make her feel better. Three quick knocks and Jonathan came back in. Dory's back, sir. Nothing new out there. I told Parker we're leaving soon. Is the gear all packed? 5 minutes.
Tia gestured toward the closed door on the far side of the room.
Pity we didn't have more notice. I hate to leave her here.
When? Lily blurted out. When are you leaving?
What makes you think we're leaving?
You are, Lily muttered, her throat hoarse with tears. On a ship.
And where do you think we're going?
To the better world. Tia leaned forward.
Lily was struck again by his silver eyes, which seemed to reflect even the dim glow provided by the fluorescence. Why did you come here, Mrs. Mayhew? This has nothing to do with you, and you took an enormous risk. Why?
Lily couldn't answer. As a child, she used to pick a single item and stare at it for as long as possible until her eyes had dried out and her gaze had lost all focus. She remembered taking a vast pleasure in having her gaze so captured, in being transfixed. And now she could not take her eyes from William Tier. She followed each of his movements, even the small ones, the rapid flicker of his eyes across her face, the tap of his fingers on one knee, the clench of his jaw. All things seemed to center on Tia, to hinge on him. I believe it.
In that moment, Lily believed it all.
There was a better world out there, somehow, and it was close, almost within their reach. The wheat, the bright blue river, the endless trees. If Tia asked her to die for the better world, she would do it. She wouldn't even need to think. And if he asked Lily to die for him, she would do that too. She had never felt anything so deeply in her life. Her eyes had watered again. Lily tore her blurry gaze from Tia and wiped her arm across her face. When she looked up, she found Jonathan watching her, a small smile on his face. He reached out a hand, and Lily clasped it in both of hers, gripping tightly. She didn't want to let go. She thought she might drown. The better world, she gasped. I see it, all the time.
We all see it, Mrs. M.
Tia reached beneath her chin and tipped her face up with one finger. His eyes were so brilliant now that they seemed to glow in the dim light.
What do you see, Lily?
Water, Lily stammered. Blue water. Then cliffs, then land. Yellow land, covered with wheat. And there's a village on a hill next to a river. Children.
What are they doing?
I don't know, Lily admitted. But they're free. They're all free. Tia smiled and released her chin.
This is the blue horizon.
Lily began to cry.
5 years ago, Tyr continued, when we asked to secede, I had planned to create the better world myself, to take a small corner of America and remake it. Despite its blight, this country is an incredible creation, and a piece of it would have served us well. But it's just as well they turned us down, for it would never have worked. Parker, people like him, they're built to spoil things. They would never have left us alone. If not them, it would be your government finding seller's remorse 10 or 15 years down the line. If we made the better world in a place where others could reach it, they would only try to tear it down.
Lily wiped away her tears. There's no more land. Where can you go?
The world is bigger than you think.
Why do they get to come along, she asked, those people outside?
Parker's people,
Tyr chuckled bitterly.
Parker's people sell their children and trade women for food. They don't get anywhere near the better world.
Sir, Jonathan muttered from the door. Listening, Lily heard voices raised in argument outside, then a quick light hum that she thought might be silenced laser fire. Tyr gestured for her to stand, and she pulled herself from the chair. She didn't know how tired she was until she tried to stand up.
I apologize, Lily, but there's no way around this. Hold still and close your eyes.
Lily shut her eyes. Her head rocked back as a short, sharp blow landed on the corner of her mouth. There was very little pain, but she tasted blood. Tyr smeared the blood across her chin, then tore the neck of her shirt in two places.
Just for show. It'll heal quickly. Don't forget to limp.
Jonathan opened the door, and Tyr dragged Lily outside. Dorian was blocking the doorway, her rifle trained on Parker and his men. They reminded Lily of wolves who had treed an animal.
This bitch is out of her mind, Parker shouted. Tell her to stand down. Security has ringed us. We need to get out of here now. We didn't see anyone. Wonderful.
Tyr's voice was acid.
You have access to satellite imagery, do you? Fuck you. Fine. Stay and wait for them.
Parker's one good eye gleamed with hatred.
How do we get out?
Tyr bent to the floor and swung up a trapdoor, revealing steps that descended into darkness. Parker gave Dorian one last furious look, then squatted to peer down the stairs.
Flashlights?
No flashlights. Our heat signature will be risky enough. It's a straight shot through the tunnels into downtown Boston.
What about the wall, bitch?
Jonathan likes her.
He wants to take her with.
Parker stared at Lily for a moment.
Oh, well. Not long now, anyway.
He made for the trap door, but Tyr stopped him with a hand on his chest.
We have an agreement, Parker. September 1st. September 1st, Parker replied, grinning.
And Lily saw so much pure evil in that grin that she had to close her eyes for a moment. She called up the real world and realized that it was now the early morning of August the 30th.
September 1st, and we have our carnival.
Tyr's mouth twitched in disgust, but he nodded.
Into the tunnel. Look for a ladder beside a blue emergency light. It'll bring you out beside Fenway.
Parker and his men went first. Perhaps 30 of Tyr's people had returned to the warehouse and gathered around the trap door. Most of them carried guns, like Dorian, but several had nothing, only small receivers tucked into their ears and tiny metallic threads coiled around their index fingers. Computer techs.
Radio silence until you get outside the city, Tyr ordered. We'll meet at home.
So Arnie had been wrong. This wasn't their headquarters, after all. Lily followed Jonathan down the stairs, and then they were into blackness. Nothing but scraping footsteps and the jingling of straps that held the guns. Dorian was somewhere behind her, Lily knew, and she took some comfort from that. Occasionally she heard squeaking sounds somewhere near her feet, but even the scurrying proximity of rats wasn't particularly frightening. These were safe people, and Lily trusted them to keep her safe, no matter where they were going.
"But what happens on September 1st?
Her mind asked, its tone plaintive.
"What's the carnival?"
After perhaps half a mile, someone coughed at the darkness ahead, and Jonathan grabbed Lily's arm, bringing her up short. Parker and his men kept moving on up the corridor, the sounds of their passage growing fainter, diminishing into silence. Jonathan pulled her to the right, whispering, "Stairs." Lily felt her way down another staircase. She had gotten a second wind for a while, but it was wearing off now, and she thought that soon she might simply collapse. But she kept going, determined not to slow them down, not to be... what had they called her? A wall bitch. It was an eerily apt term. Lily applied it to most of her friends, and found that it fit. "Hold," Tia announced, an eternity of time later. Lily paused, heard them all come to a halt around her. Bang! A deep thrumming echoed above their heads. The tunnel shook, concrete dust sifting down to land on Lily's hair and face, getting into her eyes. A great breath of heat pushed against her back, and for a few moments the tunnel was filled with a hollow roar of sound. Then it faded, and they stood once more in the quiet dark. "The better world," someone murmured. "The better world," they repeated. And Lily repeated it with them, liking the sound of her voice with theirs, hoping that no one would mind. After a moment, as though by collective consent, the entire group began walking again. They were moving through a labyrinth of tunnels now, sometimes going up staircases, sometimes down, sometimes slipping through narrow crevices that made Lily feel claustrophobic, trapped. She kept going, focusing on the present, for the future was not to be considered. She couldn't imagine what was waiting for her at home. Perhaps 20 minutes later, she followed Jonathan up a ladder and emerged through an open manhole into a dark alley, where she found herself surrounded by dumpsters that clearly hadn't been emptied in years. "Help Dory up when she comes," Tia told Jonathan. "She won't want help, but do it anyway. That bullet hasn't quite finished with her yet." Lily tucked her arms around herself. The air was warm in late August, but she was wet through with perspiration, and wind seemed to sneak up beneath her jacket.
"What happens on September 1st?
"Get your fucking hand off me," a voice hissed from the manhole.
"Shut up, Dory."
Jonathan hauled her up from the hole, rifle and all. "Everyone knows how tough you are.
I could put you down, South Carolina."
"Sure you could." "We need to move." Tia was staring at the mouth of the alley. Lily could see nothing, but she believed him. He reminded her of a dog on point, scenting danger that was invisible to the eye. After 10 people had emerged from the manhole, Jonathan replaced the cover, and Lily remembered something Arnie had said once, that the blue horizon liked to split its forces to prevent losses. The rest must have moved on in the tunnel.
"Come on, Mrs. M."
They went one at a time from the mouth of the alley, vanishing in all directions. Dorian touched Lily's shoulder in passing, but when Lily turned, she was already gone. Tia tugged at her arm, and they both followed Jonathan up a street that Lily didn't recognize. Office buildings, long derelict, reared above both sidewalks. Each window seemed to tell its own story of breakage, and Lily heard the telltale sounds of people inside shuffling and muttering. But she couldn't see anyone. The glow of smog above their heads was beginning to dim with approaching dawn.
"Get the car,"
Tia said, and Jonathan moved off into the mist. Lily swayed on her feet, and Tia grabbed her elbow, steadying her.
"You're in a lot of trouble, Mrs. Mayhew. Tell as good a story as you can about the car, but security will eventually think to look up your tag. They'll want to know what you were doing here."
"Have you ever been in custody?"
"Yes."
"What happens?"
"You try to live through it."
"And what happens on September 1st? Tia's jaw tightened.
I can't tell you.
In case they torture me?
Yes.
Lily considered this for a moment, feeling her stomach knot up. She closed her eyes, tried to think of the better world, but all she saw was the school doorway, Maddie's tousled head disappearing forever. A car pulled up in front of them, and it took Lily a moment to recognize her Lexus, Jonathan at the wheel. The car's sleek black frame seemed alien, grotesque on this broken street.
Get in. Jonathan will take you home.
Can't I? Lily took a deep breath. Can't I stay here, with all of you?
Tia looked at her for a long moment. No, Mrs. Mayhew. I'm sorry. There are already too many. A lot of good people will be left behind.
Lily nodded, trying to force a smile. But Dorian's voice rang in her head.
The better world's not for people like you.
She got into the car, barely registering the plush leather seats. Tia began to close the door, and she grabbed his wrist, almost in desperation. I don't know how I get through this. Tia put a hand on her cheek. Warmth seemed to sink into her skin, bringing her back from the cold place in her head.
I promise you, you will get through it.
You can't promise that.
Yes, I can. Believe me, you're tougher than you imagine.
How do you know?
He withdrew his hand, straightening up. The silver eyes glimmered.
I know, Lily. I've known you all my life.
The door slammed in her face and a fist thumped twice on the roof. Jonathan floored it, and Lily was thrown back in her seat. She twisted around, wriggling, until she could look out the back windshield and see William Tia staring after them, his tall frame standing military straight under the lights of Boston. They were halfway back to New Canaan before Jonathan said a word. Lily had spent the journey looking out the window trying to think of a more plausible story for security. She had nothing. With each mile, her stomach tightened, then tightened further. Knots seemed to coil in on themselves until she thought she might be sick.
Don't worry, Mrs. M.
Lily jumped. She had forgotten that someone else was in the car. She looked up and found Jonathan's eyes on her in the rearview mirror.
I think I killed him, Jonathan.
You had cause.
Lily blushed. This was the closest they'd ever come to talking about that night.
About any of the nights.
Security won't care about that.
We look out for each other, Mrs. M. We take care of each other. Without that, there's nothing.
Won't you be in trouble too, if they track this car?
I fixed the tag on this car a long time ago. It was in the garage most of the night until you called and I came to pick you up.
Lily nodded slowly. It boggled her mind, the world of hidden things that had undoubtedly been going on around her for years. Outside the window, another green sign flashed by. Tolland. The horizon was lightning, blush pink eating its way into the dark sky overhead. Lily stared at the pink haze, wishing she could see much farther east, all the way to the Atlantic, where the sun would already be up. She leaned against the window, enjoying its coolness on her cheek, and behind her eyes she saw the half-finished ship. There must be many more ships, she realized, hidden.
Where?
All over New England?
She thought she knew now what would happen on September the 1st.
They would leave, Tia and his people,
and more than anything Lily wanted to go with them, to that wide open place covered in water and trees. In the distance, outside the glass, she heard a voice.
Kelsey.
Lily shook herself awake, but it was a losing battle. Half of her body was already fast asleep.
Kelsey.
Mrs. M.
Who's Kelsey?
Lily murmured. The glass felt so cool, pillowing her cheek. She wanted to stay there forever. Wanted...
Kelsey.
She opened her eyes to a moving world, Pen shaking her shoulders. The hallway jumped wildly around her. For a moment she was back in the car, then she was back with Pen. Her head throbbed wildly. She felt sick.
Lady, I had to wake you. It's important.
What time is it?
11 in the morning.
Kelsey shook her head, trying to clear it, trying to get her bearings. She was standing in the hallway just outside the balcony room. The early sunrise was still bright in her mind, bruised pink. She could feel cool window glass on her cheek.
Well, what couldn't wait? The Mort lady. They've reached the walls.
Kelsey's heart sank. We knew this was coming.
Yes, but lady.
What?
The Red Queen. She's come with them.
Book 3. Chapter 12. Night.
You cannot bargain with the tide.
Tear proverb of unverified origin, generally attributed to the Glynn Queen. The Mort army covered both sides of the Cadell, spread north and south across the Almont, and even curving around the southern edge of New London. Dusk was coming down on the city, and in the fading light, the Mort camp was an impenetrable dark sea. In front of the black tents stood more than 50 neatly ordered lines of soldiers. To the naked eye, they seemed to be covered in glittering iron. It was an ostentatious display, clearly designed to frighten Kelsey. And it worked. She was terrified, both for herself and for the people behind her, almost her entire kingdom now crammed inside New London's walls. How could they resist the force assembled down there? Behind the tents, Kelsey glimpsed a line of siege towers, and somewhere out there, hidden from view, were the cannons. Assuming that the cannons worked, and Kelsey did, the Mort wouldn't even need their siege towers. They could simply smash the walls of New London to rubble. Glee stirred in Kelsey's arms, making her jump. The child was so easy to hold that Kelsey had forgotten she was there. Andalai had opted to come on this outing, and Kelsey had taken the girl to give her a rest. But the people in the streets had murmured in astonishment when they saw the small child in Kelsey's arms. And now Kelsey worried that she might have called too much attention to both Andalai and Glee. They were valuable, just as Andalai had said, and their best hope seemed to be in anonymity. Glee had fallen asleep on the way to the wall, but now she was awake, staring up at Kelsey, her gaze contemplative. Kelsey put a finger to her lips, and Glee nodded solemnly. Mace had picked Andalai's other daughter, Isha, to accompany them. She remained several feet behind Kelsey, almost like a second Pen, holding a knife in her hand. Mace had taken a liking to the girl, but then so had many of the guard. Corin said she had the best knife hand since Praska, whoever that was, and Elston deemed her a tough piece of business, which was the highest praise he could give. Isha was taking this expedition very seriously, never loosening her grip on the knife, her thick brows lowered over a face that was both solemn and grim. The heroism of her small, determined form now, when it could make no difference, only made Kelsey feel worse. Scanning the Mort camp, Kelsey finally found what she was looking for, a crimson tent located near the center. Though it was only a tiny speck of red among all that black, something tolled inside Kelsey like a funeral bell. The Red Queen was leaving nothing to chance this time. She had come herself, just to make sure the job was done right. Torches surrounded the tent, but after a moment Kelsey noticed something odd. These torches were the only fire she could see in the Mort camp. It was just after dinner, but the perimeter was dark. Kelsey considered this fact for a moment before tucking it away. "Did everyone make it inside the city?" she asked.
They did, lady, Mace replied. But the army was decimated in the last attempt to hold the mort from the bridge.
Kelsey's stomach roiled, and she peered down at the New London Bridge, cursing her poor eyesight. What keeps the mort off the bridge?
A barricade, lady.
Colonel Hall stepped forward, emerging from a group of army men farther down the wall. A thick bandage swaddled his right arm, from which the sleeve had been cut away, and he had taken a nasty wound across the jaw.
It's a good barricade, but it won't hold forever.
Colonel Hall. Kelsey smiled, relieved to see him alive, but sobered at the sight of his injuries.
I'm sorry for the loss of General Bermond and your men. All of their families will receive full pensions. Thank you, lady.
But Hall's mouth twisted wryly, as though acknowledging how little a pension meant in this moment. Mace poked her lightly in the back, and Kelsey remembered. I formally invest you as general of my armies. Long life to you, General Hall. He threw his head back and laughed, and though Kelsey didn't think the laughter was meant to be unkind, it rang in her ears.
Above all, let's have niceties, lady.
What else do we have now?
Glory, I suppose. Death with honour.
Precisely. Hall came a bit closer, paying no attention to Penn, who moved to block him.
May I tell you a secret, lady?
Certainly. Kelsey patted Glee's back and set her on the ground, where the child wrapped an arm around Kelsey's knee. Hall lowered his voice.
It's a real thing, Glory, but it pales in comparison to what we sacrifice for it.
Home, family, long lives filled with quiet.
These are real things, too, and when we seek glory, we give them up.
Kelsey didn't reply for a moment, realizing that Berman's death must have hit Hall harder than she had expected. Do you think I sought this war?
No, lady. But you're not content with a quiet life.
Mace grunted beside her, a soft sound that Kelsey recognized as agreement, and she fought the urge to kick him. You don't know me well enough to say that.
This entire kingdom knows you now, Queen Kelsey. You brought us all to disaster, to satisfy your own notions of glory, of better. Be careful, Hall, Penn warned. You don't? Shut up, Penn. Mace growled.
Kelsey swung around, furious. Have you turned on me for good now, Lazarus?
No, lady. But it's not wise, particularly in wartime, to silence the voice of dissent.
Kelsey's face burned, and she turned back to Hall. I didn't end the shipment for glory. I never cared about that.
Then prove me wrong, Majesty. Save the last remnants of my men from an unwinnable fight. Save the women and the children, and the men as well, from the nightmare they will surely face when the mort break the walls. You cut a man to pieces rather than watch him die a simple death by the noose. Prove me wrong, and save us all.
Hall turned back to the edge, dismissing her in a single movement. Kelsey's face had gone numb. She felt alone suddenly. Alone in a way she hadn't been since her earliest days in the keep. She looked over the faces of her guard, clustered around the stairwells that fed the inner wall. Mace, Corin, Welmer, Elston, Kib. They were loyal. They would lay down their lives for her. But loyalty wasn't approval. They thought she had failed.
Look, lady.
Mace gestured over the edge. The regimented lines of mort had not moved, but as Kelsey squinted in the dying light, she saw that there was movement down there. A clutch of figures in black cloaks darting through the lines, bearing torches, wending their way toward the front. Mace had pulled out his spyglass.
The one in the middle is the Red Queen's personal herald. I remember that little bastard.
The herald was a wisp of a man, so slight that he could easily have blended into the night in his cloak. But his voice was a thick bass that echoed off the walls of the keep,
and his tear was perfect, without even the slightest Mort accent.
The great queen of all Mort, Maine, and Calais extends greetings to the heir of the Tearling,